Hey, this is Mark, and this is your last chance to be part of history, to contribute to episode 100 of the Entree Architect podcast. On episode 100, I want to feature you, the Entree Architect community. So if you don't know yet, here's my idea. I want you to pull out your iPhone and click on your voice memo app. In your iPhone, that app is located with your utilities group, with your calculator and your compass. And if you're on Android, I know they have a voice memo app too, but I don't know how to get to it because I'm an iPhone guy. So click onto that app, hold the phone up to your mouth like you're speaking on the telephone in order to ensure a nice, crisp, clean recording, and record your answer to this simple question. What is the one thing that you did this year to improve your business, your leadership, or your life? I want you to share what you know. I want you to share one tip, one technique, one system, or suggestion that made your world a little bit better this year. So record your answer to this question. What is the one thing that you did this year to improve your business, your leadership, or your life? And email that audio file to me at support@entrearchitect.com. This is your last call. Send me your audio file before the deadline of Wednesday, November 11th, 2015. Then listen to episode 100 scheduled for release on November 20th. I can't wait to hear your voice on the Entree Architect podcast. This is the Entree Architect podcast, episode 98. Welcome back to the Entree Architect podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Have you ever considered following a dream other than a traditional practice in architecture? Do you have a passion that's burning inside? Maybe you have a great idea for this new business, but you're just afraid to pursue it because of all the hard work that it required to become a licensed architect. You don't want to just throw that all away and leave behind your dream of being an architect for a new dream pursuing something else. But what if you did? What if you pushed through that fear and you took a new path? What if you allowed yourself to follow your passion and take your life in a new direction? Our guest this week did just that. He had an idea and followed his passion to create something amazing, something influential and beneficial to others. This week, I invited the founder of BlackSpectacles.com, Mark Teer, to join me and talk about the life of an entrepreneur architect on the Entree Architect podcast. This episode of the Entree Architect podcast is sponsored by ArcaSnapper, a great way to create and manage field reports. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/ArcaSnapper. And FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at FreshBooks.com/architect. Mark Teer, welcome to the Entree Architect podcast.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad you're here today.
Thanks for having me.
You are an architect based in Chicago, and you're the founder of BlackSpectacles.com. That's an online learning platform for architecture and design. It was founded in 2010 with a mission to advance the creative potential of the architecture and design professions. And the site offers courses for learning design software and preparing to take the AREs, the architect registration exam. There's a blog and tons of videos and webinars and interviews. And it's all about the road to licensure and how technology is enabling world-class design. And pretty much there's a content of for every section of the ARE. It's really you've partnered up with the American Institute of Architects to provide online resources for studying for the ARE. Mm-hmm. So you can find everything you need there for the ARE. And there's lots of video and content and education for pretty much every available design software. So everything, pretty much everything that an architect would ever need to know that's not covered on Entree Architect, because we're all about business and leadership and life. So anything that we're not covering, you guys over at Black Spectacles are covering. So
that's right. It's the perfect combination. Yeah. Entree Architect plus Black Spectacles equals fully well-rounded architecture education.
Yeah, exactly. All you need, Black Spectacles and Entree Architect, and you're done.
That's
right. Don't even bother going to school. So I asked Mark to join us here on the podcast today to talk about the life of an entrepreneur architect. He's an architect, and he founded and launched blackspectacles.com, and it's an interesting story. So I'd like, Mark, you to sort of tell us your origin story. What inspired you to become an architect, first of all, and give us that journey from that point to where you find yourself today.
Yeah. So first of all, again, thanks for having me.
It's welcome.
A privilege to be on with you. And I'm a huge fan of what you guys are doing and trying to help small business architects do it the right way. So kudos to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep up the great work. In terms of my story, I really have no idea how I, you know, stumbled upon the, I don't have kind of a big epiphany moment, but I know that when I was in high school, I already knew that I wanted to be an architect. And so, you know, freshman year, got involved in their drafting program or whatever it was, and stuck with it for all 4 years, and made my way into architecture school at the University of Illinois down in Urbana-Champaign. Let's see, graduated, got a job, worked for about a year and a half, went to Clemson for my master's, which was an interesting experience. My first day at grad school was in Italy, which was quite a wild experience. I never really traveled. And they had a really wonderful study abroad program. So I got to travel a little bit in grad school, graduated, and ended up going back to that firm that I'd worked at previously, stayed there for, you know, maybe 3 or 4 more years, and then landed at Gensler in Chicago. And
you were there for quite a while, right?
Yeah, I was. I started there in 2005, worked for a couple of years, and then ended up through one of my colleagues getting a little position at IIT in their School of Architecture, helping to teach design software. And mostly because I wanted to teach studio, right? It didn't take me too long to figure out that was a pretty bad idea if I actually wanted to continue practicing full time, because teaching studio was a pretty massive, time commitment. And so you know, I continued to teach software because it was great, you know, being a part of, the university. And it was about that time that I started having these lunches with this professor, Bob Babin, who, he was teaching one course. He was on the board of overseers at IIT. And he had this, he was maybe like 80 or 85 years old. But he had this like sort of burning passion, I think, for both technology and entrepreneurship. So he started inviting me to these lunches that were very kind of amorphous in nature. He kind of had, you know, various ideas that he was sort of interested in, you know, for various purposes. Some of them had to do with technology. Some of them had to do with education. Some of them had to do with, you know, just architecture in general. And so we started meeting, you know, every couple of months. And sort of at the same time, the School of Architecture was kind of reconsidering their digital design curriculum. And there were maybe 4 or 5 of us who were teaching different, different design software. And all the studio professors, most of whom were, you know, in their 60s, thought that, you know, incorporating some kind of design technology into the studio was silly and didn't make any sense, which we were incredulous about because Most of the students knew that in order to work, you needed to know, you know, you needed to know the tools you needed to get a job.
Right.
And yet there wasn't any time in the curriculum to teach them, and they weren't willing to include that in the design curriculum. So they were kind of stuck.
Yeah. I think that struggle was happening all over the country at that time.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, I graduated with my master's in 2002, and throughout my entire, you know, academic career, I was sort of facing the exact same problem. So it was kind of ridiculous that, you know, however many years later, the same problem existed. And then at the same time, you know, practicing at Gensler, this is when, you know, Revit became really popular, had been adopted by the firm. And then Grasshopper sort of exploded as this new tool and the idea of parametric design. And Grasshopper was amazing because not only did it, you know, to become an important tool, but then there was this sort of rush to build all these plugins. So it was like every time you went to go learn one version of Grasshopper, there were 8 new plugins. And as a practicing architect, I was working on, I was basically, a project architect, project designer, where, you know, working on a project from before they had a site to picking the art, in the building after it was done. So we're working through the entire thing and just feeling like, gee, you know, if I want to do great work, I need to know all these tools, and God, I'm sinking over here. How the hell is someone supposed to, you know, keep up with all this stuff? So I was having this problem, you know, how am I supposed to learn all these tools? And I was in a firm that had a tremendous amount of resources, had sent me to a number of conferences to learn stuff. And then I saw my students were having a similar problem where they're supposed to know all these tools and nobody wanted to teach them. So somehow those experiences, plus my meetings with Bob Babin, plus, there was a time where I did some web design work for an artist friend of mine, and needed to learn Adobe Flash. I'd committed to my friend that, I'm going to design this website for you. It's going to be awesome. It'll be in Flash. So, you know, it'll be kind of like a game. We can, you know, do all this cool stuff, knowing full well that I had never, you know, I knew nothing about how to use Flash. So I hopped on the web, typed in learn Flash, and stumbled upon lynda.com. And, you know, was blown away. Of course, they had a 4-hour course on, you know, how to build a website in Flash, which was exactly what I needed. It was $25 a month. Are you kidding? Like, what an amazing value.
Explain what Lynda is in case people don't know.
Sure. Lynda is, it's an online tutorial library. They cover all sorts of software. So I believe they started with both sort of graphic design software and then also HTML and sort of the software and the tools you need to learn in order to code websites. I think that was kind of their core competency early on. And then, you know, I think they were, before they were bought by LinkedIn recently, I think they had been in business for 16 or 17 years. And so over the course of the history of their company, you know, the breadth of tools they have tutorials in, you know, grew to encompass some, you know, other industries. And so it's a monthly membership fee, and you get access to their entire training library. So it was really sort of these sort of 4 experiences, right? You know, these lunches with, you know, this sort of mentor, you know, practicing, and kind of sinking, in practice, with this, you know, overwhelming surge of new tools, seeing my students, and then having sort of an experience with kind of a good alternative as a way to learn some tools that I needed to learn. Man, one day it just kind of hit me. I think it was after one of those lunches with Bob. I was walking back to the office, and man, the idea just like hit me in the head. Like, what if we built lynda.com for architects? You know, yeah. Man, that would kill. You know, it would. It could have. You know, it could have. You know, all the Autodesk stuff. It could have Rhino and Grasshopper and all the other plugins and rendering tools and, you know, the tools you need to create diagrams and, you know, put presentations together, like all the stuff that I needed to know or that someone who was coming into the firm needed to know, could have it all in one place. And the truth is that, you know, I remember, I think this was all in the context of me doing a tremendous amount of stuff on this project that I was working on. And by that, I mean, you know, we were working in the design process. So I was simultaneously working in a SketchUp model and a Revit model and preparing it to go into 3D Max to get renderings. Which then you bring those renderings into Photoshop and you do your post-production there. You then take those images, bring them into an InDesign file. Oh, and by the way, you take your Revit, file and you're creating, plans, sections, and elevations, which you then are bringing into, Illustrator and coloring them and then bringing them into InDesign and then creating the books and like the entire thing. Oh, and by the way, we're working on design development details in Revit and some of them are coming from CAD. And so, the real life of an architect is you're working in 10 tools at one time. You're not working in just one tool, which is, that's their approach. It's like, okay, today we're going to learn CAD, which is fine. And sometimes you really need to know that, but the missing piece there is how what's the best way to use CAD when you're trying to get that CAD file into Revit and then you need to get it out into Illustrator, what are the right workflows? And that's kind of like the next level. That was the idea. I went back and grabbed my buddy Jorge, who at the time was a digital design. He was like the firm-wide digital design leader. He had a tremendous amount of experience creating, beautiful renderings. And I explained the idea to him, like, hey, what if we do this thing? We could build a website, we could create all these tutorials, it would be awesome. He's like, wow, that's a great idea. And I said, awesome, do you want to do it? And he's like, no. And I was kind of disappointed and sort of shocked. Now I realize, oh yeah, that's right. He grew up watching his two parents run a very successful restaurant. And so he knows the sacrifice. He knew the sacrifices and what was involved in creating a business. And he was doing just fine at Gensler and was very happy. I pounded my fist on the table and said, well, screw it. I'm going to do it anyways. We're going to be launched in a month. Let's go. Now it's kind of laughable, but
that's how it starts. Michael Gerber of the E-Myth calls that the entrepreneurial seizure, when that hit you and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. This is going to be so easy. Let me just, dot, 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 and we're done. And then all of a sudden, life gets in the way and business gets in the way and the dream starts to fade and it gets frustrating and, you get overwhelmed and you start questioning whether it was worth doing and,
Yeah, no, it's really true. And I use that phrase all the time. Because it really does very accurately describe kind of what happens. It's just like, it really is kind of an overwhelming thing. And, for me, it's sort of interesting. I mean, I guess the way I kind of, articulate that story, it makes it sound like it was always going to be this idea, this online learning library. But I guess the truth is that, while that's the idea that certainly emerged, sort of at the same time, I started thinking, maybe I want to, start my own practice actually. Cause we're doing nice work here at Gensler, but gee, how us architects are, I can do it better. So let's, why don't I start doing that? And actually that was sort of the first road that I kind of began to explore. And it's sort
now,
of,
was that before the black spectacles idea or simultaneously?
Yeah. So it was like maybe a month or two before kind of that moment.
Those entrepreneurial juices started flowing around in your brain and you had your initial entrepreneurial seizure about starting your own firm.
It's really true. And it's funny now I look back and, I realize, oh yeah, this has kind of always been kind of going on. Like, all those design competitions I did on the side while I was working. Yeah. That was kind of like starting your own business. I had a, business in college, a paper route when I was a kid. So it's like, I guess when I look back now, it's like, oh yeah, I guess I kind of always had that, that kind of thing inside, that just meant that I wasn't ever going to be satisfied. If I wasn't kind of, on my own, I guess. So in any case, I quickly, after sort of deciding, I think the first fist pounding on the table was I'm going to go start my own practice. And, the more I thought about it and the more I talked to people, I realized, that, I could probably do that, but I would probably be doing, garage renovations and deck renovations for, for the next 5 years and kind of clawing my way up. I just sort of felt like I wasn't going to be able to, because I didn't have kind of the, frankly, the money laying around to go after the sorts of projects maybe that I wanted to go after. And then I also didn't, you know, have the existing relationships with the type of folks who maybe, you know, wanted to do interesting work. I just realized that I was, you know, I was going to kind of, I wasn't going to end up in a better situation than I was. I eventually sort of found this or kind of rekindled this idea of an online, learning resource for architects.
So when you started that, was it in your mind that it was a side project? It was just, you're going to stay at Gensler and you're going to be an architect and you're going to start this side thing and it's going to be great. Was that the idea?
No, upon, you know, fist pounding,
yeah.
I was going to launch in a month and, you know, I was going to be a millionaire in, 3 months, you know, yeah. It was over.
So you had decided that you were, as Michael O'Neill of the Solopreneur Hour calls it, you were unemployable.
Yeah,
you, something happened within you that you said, okay, I just cannot be an employee anymore. I'm unemployable. This is who I am. I'm an entrepreneur and I'm going to go do this.
Yeah. You know, there's something, and I've, whenever I have architects, young architects who they want to meet with me to have an architecture confessional where they tell me, you know, Father Mark, you know, I don't think I like this architecture thing anymore. The thing that, occurred to me is, you know, through our schooling and really just sort of the work of an architect empowers you with so many skills that, you're just so well equipped to go start something on your own. I don't know. I could go on and on about it, but you're just really, really
on.
Well.
That's a topic I talk about all the time.
Yeah,
so talk about what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, how do I even start? I guess the, here's the thing I say a lot, and I guess it's true, is that, you know, as an architect, you have kind of the audacity to look someone in the eye with a blank piece of paper and say, you know, and they tell you, you know, I want a, you know, a $50 million building and it needs to have all this stuff and it needs to follow all these regulations and it needs to be safe and it needs to be beautiful and, you know, all this stuff. And you can look them in the eye and say, you know, okay, well, when do you want it? You know? And you have the confidence and again, the audacity that you can, you know, get started and you can do that. That idea of starting from a blank piece of paper and going to something as sophisticated as, you know, a new building. I mean, that's basically what building a business is, right? It's, you can use every single part of the design and construction process as a metaphor for building a business. In many ways we have that kind of practice at doing it. And it's just slightly different. And what's funny is that, you know, as an architect, you know, we're equipped to know a little bit about everything, right? I don't know everything about, you know, what legal entity to create my business in, but it doesn't matter. I just kind of know I needed to have a business entity and then I know I can go figure it out. And it doesn't matter that, you know, I don't know, you know, how to develop a website, but it doesn't really matter. I can go and figure it out. So we just sort of know, we just have this confidence that we can sort of figure it all out. And it's funny, the part that we really don't get a lot of experience in is actually in sales, and how to, you know, which is, at the end of the day, is the most important thing. And so, you know, that's the thing I feel just personally, like, you know, that's the part that I don't have the experience in, but everything else, you know, building the whole business, you know, I feel comfortable and confident that we can do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that architects are equipped, are naturally equipped to build businesses. I mean, that's why I started Entrepreneur Architect, because small firm architects who are running their own firm are entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. whether they realize it or not, that's what they are. They've decided that they're going to leave an established firm and go do their own thing. They're either going to start with somebody else or they're going to start from scratch, and they're going to build this empire that they yep. want from zero, from a bunch of dirt on the ground. Okay, where am I going to start? I have no money, no clients, nothing. Where yeah. do I go from here? And you figure it out. And that's an entrepreneur. Taking that risk, to take that leap from that comfortable job with that monthly paycheck to the unknown, to the future, to the hope and the dreams of what you might become is all about being an entrepreneur architect. And that's what you've done as well. You've taken the greater risk to not start your own firm, but to start a related but different business.
Yeah.
So how do you, because this is a question I get very often, how do you reconcile not practicing architecture anymore? And after all of that education and all of that effort and all that time, leave the profession, quote unquote,
sure,
and start something that's not an architecture firm.
Yeah. So there's a couple of points there. The first is, your earlier question about, was this going to be a side job, a side project or something? It was interesting. I mean, I was doing my best to climb the ladder at Gensler to become a design director. So I was very much, as I like to say now, trying to become Frank Lloyd Wright, right? Trying to become a famous architect. And making good progress on that, I think, at the time. But it just, for me, it just, at the, where I was in my life, it just didn't make any sense. You know, continuing down that road seems silly because I saw the people ahead of me and sort of what it meant for them to do that. And it just wasn't really what I wanted. So I wasn't willing to do that, which is why, doing something different became so appealing. And so very much starting Black Spectacles was me, I had to sort of, in my own mind, just sort of walk away from that idea. And that's something that I'd been working on for, 10 or 15 years, right? So there was that. And it's funny, I sometimes go to dinner parties with friends. and over the years, I would catch a quiet moment with one of them and they would be like, do you like what you're doing? Like, don't you actually, the best one is, don't you miss practicing? And, it's kind of a funny question now because it's such an emphatic no, not at all. I think at the end of the day, the reason is because, although the work I was working on was interesting, it was so limiting. There was so little that I was able to influence. And what I'm able to do now running this business is so much more interesting. It's so much more diverse, at this stage of the game too. I'm learning so much, and I don't want to say that I mastered architecture or anything like that, but I felt like I got to a point where I kind of got it, kind of a general sense. So, I guess I didn't get bored with architecture, but, instead just find this to be much more appealing. So it's been an easy transition, I guess. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you found inspiration and passion elsewhere, and you had the courage to say, okay, I did spend all this time and all this effort to become a licensed architect, and I am a licensed architect, and I will always be an architect.
Right.
To follow that other dream, to follow that other passion, and that's a very courageous thing to do. But at the same time, if you listen to yourself, if you listen to your mind and you listen to your own desires, it's easier to take that step because it's where you want to go. It's where you want to be. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to Arcasnapper and FreshBooks for their support as platform sponsors of Entree Architect. Because as platform sponsors, these companies have provided funding and support for our overall mission to become an influential force in the profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms to build better businesses in order to be better architects, and I want to say thank you. Arcasnapper is a simple tool for creating and managing field reports. With Arcasnapper, architects draft field reports on-site using their phone or tablet. ArcaSnapper is easy to use and it saves a lot of time. I put ArcaSnapper to the test myself and I love it. Once I set it up and I understood all the features and how it works, it's become a part of my regular workflow at project meetings. I take notes, I shoot photos, I sketch my thoughts right on top of the photos, and it's all automatically uploaded to the cloud. Once I get back to the studio, I log in at my desktop, click a button, and my field report is ready to go. ArcaSnapper, grow your business instead of struggling with field reports. If you want to learn more about ArcaSnapper and get a free 30-day trial, visit entrearchitect.com/Archisnapper. And FreshBooks. You've heard me over and over again say profit, then art. The systems are what make a difference in a well-functioning, profitable firm. Mastering some of the less creative tasks, like staying on top of our invoices and tracking our time, is a really crucial part of running our firms. And this is where FreshBooks, our friends and our platform sponsor, can help in a big way. FreshBooks is the amazingly simple invoicing solution perfectly suited for creative professionals who need to focus on their work and not their paperwork. Creating and sending invoices, tracking your time, and managing your expenses will become the easiest part of your day, and you'll probably end up wondering why you didn't start sooner. If you have questions, help is free forever. And you can always count on FreshBooks award-winning support rock stars to go above and beyond whatever you need anytime. And I tested them myself. They answered my call on the first ring, and I had my issue resolved within minutes. It was beautiful. To try FreshBooks free for 30 days, just go to freshbooks.com/architect and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
The thing that's interesting actually is, you know, is that I didn't go off and start a pizza joint, right? So in many ways, it's funny talking to insurance agents or even bankers and stuff. The first question is they're trying to figure out, you know, where's the credibility in this business? Who's the one who's checking all the content, right? And I didn't even really realize it, but I mean, you know, I guess I'm an expert in architecture, right? Like, so in many ways, you know, that, so I didn't walk away from architecture and then go, you know, open up a restaurant, but instead, you know, really the experience and knowledge I've gained over the years, practicing is now this like really, really valuable asset, that is really kind of at the center of Black Spectacles at the moment. You know, eventually we'll grow, and we're, you know, we're working, you know, with the curriculum committee and other architects and so on. But at the end of the day, right now, you know, the curriculum is kind of directed, you know, by the expertise and experience that I've kind of gained over the years. And then also really the relationships that, that I've also, you know, built and developed over the years with other architects who are experts. All those things sort of, you know, combined is really what has made Black Spectacles what it is. It's what's lent the credibility. I mean, we have, you know, architects who are practicing at SOM and Gensler and Crick and Sexton and so on, who are coming in and they're teaching stuff. They're basically teaching people how they do it in the office. So you have these people who are working on really sophisticated projects. And you know, one of the reasons that they're teaching with us is they know that, we kind of, we get it, yeah. Because, you know, as Brian DeYoung from SOM said the other day, you know, it's architects learning from architects. Your question about, you know, walking away from the profession, it is true, but on the other hand, you know, I've just sort of repurposed in a way all that experience and those relationships and sort of turned it into a business that, you know, now is helping the profession that, you know, I'm still a member of in some way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I asked that question because I know other people are asking that question. I agree. I think that everything that you've done from, you know, starting at undergrad school through master's, you know, through, starting at this small firm in Gensler, working your way all the way up to this point, teaching, all of that had to have happened in order to get to Black Spectacles. Black Spectacles would have never happened, and it would have never been what it is today if you did not go through that progression. And so it's not turning your back on the profession. It's an evolution of Mark Thier and what Mark Thier is capable of. And it's taking all of the information that you've learned. And rather than going and designing buildings and affecting the world that way, you've taken all of that information and you've put it back into the profession so the profession can grow and become stronger and benefit from all of the knowledge that you've gained all through all these years. It's a great progression. And the reason I bring it up is because there are other architects out there that are just like you and me.
Sure.
That have these ideas and have gone through that process of becoming a licensed architect and have gone through the pain of doing that, because it's not easy. It's a struggle to get there.
Yep.
And don't follow their passion just because they don't want to stop designing buildings. That they don't want to use all of that information and go do, you know, quote unquote, something else. So I wanted to just use that as inspiration for the people who are listening, for those who do have those ideas. And some of those ideas can be started as side hustles that can just, you can practice your first entrepreneur architect is a perfect example.
Yeah.
It started as a personal blog and it grew into what it is today. And I still run Fivecat and I'm doing Entrepreneur Architect and it's growing. You know, I could definitely say that Entrepreneur Architect is becoming a much bigger thing than Fivecat. And eventually my focus will have to be on one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's encouraging to hear you say that, that you haven't left the profession and that it's just an evolution, of you as an architect.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, especially that idea. And I say this a lot, you know, that I feel like when you come out of school, if they've done their job like most schools do, you walk out of there feeling like if you don't become a famous architect, you've failed. And I get that. I mean, that's not entirely why I was sort of on that road, but I mean, it's certainly part of it. The thing about running a business is, the thing about designing buildings is it's really about making design decisions, design choices. And so I think that the choices you make when you're building a business, they're the same things. It's just they represent themselves in a different way. But it's the same design problem solving that you've learned in school that you learn in practice. So it's even if you had a business, even if you were developing, even if I was running a pizza joint, which is sort of a neat idea, but
mine is a hot dog stand.
Oh, a hot dog stand. think that the same logic applies in that you're still making those sorts of choices in just a different way.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's tremendously rewarding and fulfilling to be sort of on this road for sure.
But it's not easy, is it?
What are you talking about? It's a piece of cake.
So you're 5 years into it, yeah. Right? You had that entrepreneurial seizure. You've yeah. pounded your fist. You said you're going to launch it in a year, and what happened from there?
Yeah.
To where you are today.
Yeah. So we. So it took us, I wanted to launch it in a month, actually.
All right, a month, right. That's what
and,
you said,
right. And so as a part of that, I started meeting with people and, thankfully met a couple of great people who started to kind of settle me down a little bit. It's interesting. I read this great book by Paul Arden. He has two or three of these little books. I think the one that I'm referring to is it's not how good you are. It's how good you want to be or whatever you think the opposite. It's one of those two books. And they're this sort of, really simple, brief kind of thing, or book. But in there, there's a quote that was inspiring to me, which said something like, something about build it and fix it as you go. Especially us architects, that's not a philosophy that's going to sell very well or that's going to endear any client with any confidence in you.
Right.
So of course that's not how we proceed. We want to develop something that's perfect, right? Or that's at a really high level instead of kind of, building something that's close enough and then kind of iterating on it.
We want it to be finished.
Yeah. So that's sort of a foreign idea. And so it was really helpful for me because I just knew that if I tried to create something that was perfect and then go out to market, that I would just never launch it. And so that was a really helpful kind of philosophy to kind of have in the back of my mind. I guess the story goes that it took us 16 months to launch. So we launched in January of 2012. And, orchestrated what I actually now look back upon, and I think it was actually a pretty good launch. you know, we developed a competition with the Chicago Architectural Club here in Chicago. We partnered on that. The competition entries were due right when we launched our site. And then there was a public voting period that occurred on Facebook, where you had to sort of publicly vote for folks on Facebook. And then at the same time, we had been sort of accruing a beta test group. And then we offered them a 50% off for life discount, you know, in the first month. So we orchestrated this really nice kind of first month kind of launch. We made $1,000 in our first month, which made me really concerned, because I knew that our second month was going to, you know, be a fraction of that, which it was. And so that began, you know, a really, really sort of slow, slow growth. It's interesting, you know, I quickly began to sort of reach out to the, actually maybe there's a couple points there. This one guy who I encountered along the way, he made a comment to me that having sort of the expectation that when we launched, you know, we would make $25,000, or I don't even know what number I thought we were going to make, right, but that we were going to just kill it and knock it out of the park. Probably really helped me get there, get to the finish line, and keep pushing the whole way. Cause you know, in that 16 months, you know, we developed a brand, we developed a blog, you know, I rented an office, I built a recording studio, you know, I like dreamt up a way to like make these tutorials. I recruited, you know, 5 authors. We made 10 courses, you know, I hired a video editor, you know, we developed an e-commerce site, you know, went through 2 or 3 developers until we found the right one, built the site. I left my job and then we launched. Like all that happened in 16 months while I was working, you know, a full-time job. And so having that kind of carrot at the end, you know, probably kind of got me there. But in any case, you know, we launched and, you know, I reached out to the sort of the business community here in Chicago, which was just forming, you know, at the time. I shouldn't say just forming, but it was beginning to kind of coalesce at the time. And, you know, eventually got some interesting advice from this one guy who suggested that a great way to, you know, kind of propel this business forward was to, you know, pursue partnerships with, you know, organizations. And so immediately, you know, the AIS came to mind, and of course AIA National and, you know, my local AI Chicago chapter are like, these are the obvious organizations. Right. And so, you know, over that summer, you know, we crafted a partnership with AIS, which was a great big deal for us.
The architecture students, American yeah. Institute of Architecture Students.
That's right. So that was a big deal for us. Helped get our name out there, helped generate sales, frankly. It's interesting. We got the opportunity to, actually, it's funny how these things sort of happen. And I think these sorts of stories are useful. I was having drinks with a friend of mine. We had been the co-chairs of AI Chicago's Young Architects Forum back in the day. And we were having drinks and I was telling him, you know, that I was interested in developing a brand, the Black Spectacles brand, to kind of revolve around design. And although we were teaching software, which is this sort of techie, nerdy kind of, you know, kind of thing, that I knew that architects care about design, they love design. And so I wanted to have our brand associated with those sorts of things. And I said, gee, it would be so cool one day if we could, you know, have our name associated with AI Chicago's Design Night, which is kind of the, it's kind of like the Oscars for Chicago architecture. You know, it happens at Navy Pier in their grand ballroom. It's this really sort of nice event where, you know, all the best design projects are awarded. And he said, oh, well, you should be an in-kind sponsor. And I was like, what's an in-kind sponsor? And he explained to me that, you know, in exchange for being a platinum sponsor, you do something. So he said, you should email Zurich. So I email Zurich. He writes back, absolutely. What do you want to do? And my answer was, I have no idea. He then proposed that we put together a video for Helmut Jahn, who was winning the Lifetime Achievement Award, which I thought was totally awesome.
Yeah.
And so I partnered up with
great opportunity.
A local filmmaker guy and Jack Newell. We put our heads together. We interviewed literally like the A-list of every best architect in the city of Chicago, put together a video that was very successful. It was shown at Design Night. And afterward, Zurich emailed. He was said, "Hey, you know, I heard that you and Joan from AIA were talking about our ARE workshops and doing something on your website with them. Tell me more." So it was almost like, you know, the credibility earned from putting that together,
right.
Kind of provoked him to say, "Hey, let's consider that." And that really began about a year and a half kind of process of developing an ARE curriculum. Because, you know, going all the way back to sitting in a park before work, you know, sketching ideas, you know, on wanting to do something, you know, on what black spectacles could be, it always seemed obvious, you know, we could do these video tutorials and software, and then, you know, we could do, you know, the ARE, we could do a lead exam, we could do the NCIDQ, you know, it sort of extends itself to all these other things. So it took us about a year and a half to put it all together. So we developed a partnership with AI Chicago, launched our ARE curriculum in May of 2014, and like, holy cow, it just like totally took off. It was really the thing that kind of like took us to a new level, both, you know, the curriculum itself, but also just being associated with AI Chicago, the credibility and the awareness that kind of created for us was incredible. And then, you know, we got lucky that AIA convention was in Chicago that year. So about 6 weeks after we launched with AIA Chicago, everyone from National was here, which then kind of that began the some conversations with National, which then continued. And eventually in May of 2015, so just, you know, 5 or 6 months ago, we formalized a relationship with AIA National, rebranded the product as AIA ARE Prep. And now we have a real business. You know, it's one of those things. There's a certain point where you kind of, you know, folks don't talk about it too much, but, you know, there's like these base camps you kind of need to get to with your business, you know, like, you know, you need to launch your product or whatever it is. So you got to get there. And then once you're there, you know, the business needs to pay for itself, right? And then it needs to pay for itself and you, and then it needs to pay for itself and you and your team, or, you know, your first, you know, team member, and then, you know, keep going from there. So we had been on that road, and really, you know, the partnership with AI Chicago really got us kind of to that first base camp. And of course, you know, now this relationship with National has really helped us get sort of to the next level. And, you know, all, you know, our business is all funded by, you know, by a regular guy. You know, we don't have any VC funding or anything like that, or any investors. And I'm certainly not a wealthy guy, you know, just kind of, you know, built it a little bit at a time. And, you know, thankfully, you know, the idea, some of the ideas kind of, I learned from Jason Fried, you know, from 37 Signals, who, you know, it's funny, you know, we've talked about this, Mark, but, you know, the ideas of just starting a business, you know, now you have, there's a lot of press around startups and tech startups and, you know, getting investors and Shark Tank and all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, starting a business is a really old fashioned thing. And at the end of the day, you just need to sell. I was listening to some podcast, and some guy said, you know, like his dad used to say, you know, do you have more money in your, you know, your bank account, you know, at the end of the day than you did at the beginning of the day? Like, it's really simple, yeah. In some ways.
That's the goal.
Yeah. And so, so we didn't, you know, in some ways, you know, we didn't, and I actually think if you find investors early on, you know, you've just kind of created a difficult and kind of artificial situation for your business. Whereas it's so pure and so honest to just go out there and say, "Hey, I've got this thing. You want to buy it?" And if everyone votes no with their credit card, well, then your idea sucks and you just need to go get a new idea. But if people do vote with their credit card, then you know you've got something. And so it's all just a matter of sticking with it until you know, the word gets out and you finally kind of get to the right level, I guess.
Yeah. There's so many lessons in this episode through having this conversation with you. It's been a great conversation. You talked about how it's all started with this mentorship, you know, that it's important to reach out to the people who who've been through these things before us. Because not only do they lead to the things that maybe that person is experienced with, but it leads to other things. I mean, your mentor had no experience in online business, yet through those mentorship, through that mentorship, it inspired this idea.
Yep.
You talked about scratching your own itch, basically, right? This started as a problem that you had. You were developing these, or you were working in these software packages, and there was no place where you could learn the skills you needed to learn. And so there was the idea,
right?
Inspired by other companies that are already started. Lynda.com is a great inspiration. And I loved the idea of base camps, that business is like climbing a mountain.
Yeah.
And it's, the goal is just to get to the next base camp.
Yep.
And don't worry about, you know, summiting, just worry about getting to the next base camp. I talk about small victories all the time. Don't worry about the big picture. You know, have a plan. You know that you want to go to the summit, but don't worry about what path you're going to take or how you're going to get there. Just worry about getting to the next base camp. It's a great analogy for business.
And that's hard for us as architects too, because the other analogy I use all the time is, you know, we're used to, again, that person saying, I want a $50 million building and here's a white piece of paper. And so you go make that $50 million building. So you go straight to the summit.
Right.
But so much of, you know, running and building a business is about, you know, first building a doghouse that you renovate into a garage that you can renovate into a single family home, into a multifamily apartment, into, you know, like that finally becomes this high rise, you know? And so it's about that. And that's hard, actually. It's hard to swallow the idea that, you know, you're not going to be, because that's the thing, is that we're capable of designing. I mean, I remember when I started and I spoke to, it's funny. I'm some of the first important people who I met with were this company called Hopley, and Aaron and Jess, they helped sort of with some strategic thinking and a variety of other things. And they also helped us put together an RFP for our website. So I had a, you know, a $20,000 budget, and I said basically I wanted to build Lynda.com for architects, right? And sent that out to a bunch of designers and developers, and they all turned me down except for one company, Bright Great, who we were talking about earlier. And it was great. I met with him and Ryan Evans, who's now co-founder of Tend.io. And both of them sort of had the same message, and they were like, you know, you just basically articulated a $150,000 website. So you're never going to build that for $20,000. But instead, like, here's a strategy for how you can start. And like, you don't even have a brand, man. Like, you don't have a following. No one even knows you exist. Right. So first step is, let's create you a brand and let's create you a blog and start writing some content. Start amassing an email list and a following. And then if that, like, continues and moves forward, then we can work on designing the e-commerce site, and then we can, you know. So it was like, it was actually really interesting and kind of unexpected that some of the, what you might refer to as vendors, right, my designer and my developer ultimately, they were actually vetting me, which I found to be really interesting. They were vetting my idea, and it was funny. They Jason from Bright Great, you know we had a talk at the beginning, and yeah, he helped me sort of develop that strategy. And then as we moved forward and I actually, you know, found the right developer, it was interesting. You know, they took my plan of what I wanted to build and they just cut a bunch of stuff out. And they're like, yeah, we're not doing any of that stuff. This is the basic thing and this is what we're going to do. Oh, and by the way, do you have any content? Like, do you have any video tutorials yet? And I almost had to sort of prove to them, like, yeah, I do. We're working on them right now. So
they wanted to build a foundation. They wanted to just lay the groundwork for what was to come.
Well, I think from their experience, they knew that you had to sort of start small and that most people probably come to them and they want to build the entire mountain and you have to just start small and you have to build the first thing first and make that work. And if it doesn't work, well, then at least you didn't go lose $150,000, you know?
Yeah. And that's a great lesson for all of us. You know, whether you're starting an architecture firm or an online business, it's the same thing that you need to start at the beginning, start small And especially today, architects can start a virtual firm for almost nothing. For less than $1,000, you buy a decent computer, some software, well, a couple thousand dollars. You can buy some inexpensive software, a good computer, and you're in business.
Yep.
You know, set it up on your kitchen table and start.
Yeah.
And it can grow from there. And so that's a great lesson too. We're running up against the clock here. So I want to thank you very much, Mark, for sharing your story and sharing your knowledge with us here at the podcast. Again, it's blackspectacles.com is where people can find all of these tutorials and everything that you're doing over there. I highly suggest that people go take a look at it. It's a beautiful site, and some great content there. You're also on Twitter at Black Spectacles, and so people can find you there as well. Thanks for sharing your knowledge with the profession here at the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
It's been a pleasure to be with you guys.
I want you to share a link to this episode with everybody you know. EntreArchitect.com/episode98. You can put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook, email a link to EntreArchitect.com/episode98 to all your friends, because this episode with Mark Thier of Black Spectacles, I found so inspiring. I think there are so many architects that are in the position that Mark was before he started Black Spectacles, that he was a traditional architect and he had this passion to do something else. He had this idea to pursue this dream that was beyond traditional practice, something that could be inspiring and informative and inspirational for others. I think there are a lot of architects in that position. And I want you to send this episode to all your friends to maybe inspire them to pursue those dreams, to pursue those ideas, and to create things that are beyond the traditional practice. If you are an architect and you're in traditional practice, I encourage you to pursue that with all your passion and learn about business and be an entrepreneur architect in traditional practice. But if you have this idea and this passion to go beyond that and to create something amazing beyond traditional architecture for the benefit of others, I want you to do that. And I want you to share this episode with everybody you know, so all the people out there who may be feeling that way can hear Mark's story. So EntreArchitect.com/episode98. Please share it. And don't forget to send me your audio files. This is the last time I'm going to request them. The deadline is November 11th, 2015. The episode is coming out on November 20th, 2015. Answer this question: what is the one thing that you did this year to improve your business, your leadership, or your life? And I want you to share your knowledge with the Entree Architect community. Email your answer to support@entrearchitect.com. And don't forget, the file is due November 11th, 2015. This is your last chance. Do it right now. Episode 100 is going to be amazing. I have a bundle of audio files already. It's going to be an amazing episode. It's going to be a lot of work to edit all this stuff, but I am so excited to do it. I can't wait to hear your voice on the Entree Architect podcast. Don't forget, do it right now. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to share what you know. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.